to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
Racial minorities have been disproportionately the victims when police use excessive force. The police have been used to enforce a caste system in our society in the past, but most police officers serve with good motivations and a desire to serve their communities.
In Eugene, we have a lot of these things already implemented. The visible identifiers is a policy we looked at just last week. So for those who don't know, the Eugene Police Commission is a body of citizens appointed by City Council to look and review and make sure that police policy is always up to date and in line with community standards.
It's not just about creating the mechanisms, it's also about making sure that they're accessible, making sure people are familiar with the process, that the process isn't too cumbersome for someone who might have a middle school education and maybe has lots of trauma and maybe some substance abuse issues, maybe is homeless, right? There has to be ways to not just have the mechanisms in place, but also to make sure that they are working.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, kp.org, Lane Community College, lanecc.edu, Peace Health, peacehealth.org, the University of Oregon, uoregon.edu, Lane County, and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's April 23rd, 2021 program. Oregon Legislature Tackles Equity in Policing. Please note that this program was recorded before a verdict was rendered in the Derek Chauvin case, so the implications of that decision will not be discussed. This is the 30th program of our 2020-2021 programming year. My name is Scott Coltrane, and I'm the City Club President. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page and are broadcast on public radio station KLCC 89.7 on Mondays at 7 p.m. In today's program, we welcome Oregon's House District 11 State Representative Marty Wilde, Sean Shivers, and Michael Hames Garcia. Marty Wilde was first elected to represent Oregon's House District 11 in 2018. He is currently a member of the House Committee on Equitable Policing. Sean Shivers has served on the Eugene Police Commission since 2017 and has been chair since 2018. Michael Hames Garcia is a Eugene Police Commissioner and a member of the city's Civilian Review Board. He was a professor at the University of Oregon from 2005 to 2021 and was recently appointed to the faculty at the University of Texas at Austin. Biographical information on our speakers is available on our website. I would like to thank Mary Layton for coordinating today's program and Joel Corin for moderating. In the wake of demonstrations demanding critical examination of criminal justice systems and more even-handed enforcement of laws, the Oregon Legislature is currently considering 21 bills to begin the work of improvement. The Committee on Equitable Policing, a subcommittee of the House Committee on Judiciary, is deliberating these bills. Representative Marty Wilde will review the content of the bills and give an update on their status as of mid-April. Sean Shivers and Michael Hames Garcia will discuss the extent to which the bills address the problems of greatest concern.
Hello, I'm Joel Corin from the Program Committee of the City Club of Eugene. Welcome to our program. Our first speaker will be Representative Marty Wilde. Marty?
Thank you, Joel. I appreciate it. Thank you for inviting me back to City Club. It's always a pleasure to come back. And it's an honor to serve on the Equitable Policing Subcommittee in the state legislature. I'd like to especially thank Senator James Manning and Representative Janelle Bynum for their work. First, I'd like to acknowledge a few truths about our work. Racial minorities have been disproportionately the victims when police use excessive force. The police have been used to enforce a caste system in our society in the past, but most police officers serve with good motivations and a desire to serve their communities. Also, no one likes being in a profession that tolerates the presence of people who don't live up to the values of that profession. I start with those values, and I'd like to tell you a little about the work we're doing in the legislature. We actually did a lot in two special sessions last year. In the first special session of 2020, last summer, we sort of made our first attempt to ban chokeholds. We established a duty to intervene when an officer witnesses misconduct by a fellow officer to the detriment of the public. We established a suspensions and revocations database through the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. That's our police licensing agency. We passed some limits on the use of tear gas and other indiscriminate munitions. And then we started some arbitration reforms as well for police discipline. In the second special session of 2020, we came back and added two additional concepts. We further limited the use of chokeholds by police and corrections officers. And we updated our use of force standards to comply with Supreme Court cases and required de-escalations and alternatives before the use of deadly force. These were the most significant updates to the use of force in 40 years, and I'm indebted to my colleagues for the work they put in on those. So I'd like to tell you a little about the work we're doing now in the 2021 legislative session. Really, our reforms run from everything from hiring and training all the way through discipline and termination of officers and even compensating victims. When it comes to hiring and training, we are working on bills that will do better background checks to make sure that people with histories of racist behavior or associations with criminal or discriminatory groups are prohibited from joining the police. We also have a bill to improve training at the DPSST, for the officer basic course, on bias crimes, making sure police understand and effectively investigate those crimes. We're also working on training on trauma-informed policing, making sure that police better appreciate the impacts of trauma on people that they're interacting with on a daily basis. Also, in the initial training for officers, we're trying to make sure they get training on CPR and airways to make sure the police avoid injury as they take people into custody. There's a lot of operations reforms we've been working on as well, both in response to the circumstance with George Floyd, but also in response to the activities in Portland last summer. First, ensuring that uniforms, that officers are identifiable as police when they're performing crowd control duties, that they have a name or identifier so they can be reported if there's a problem. We found that anonymity breeds impunity, and it was important to be able to identify officers who were acting for the public. We are working on legislation also to limit the circumstances when an assembly, a protest, can be declared unlawful and be dispersed. You have First Amendment rights to assembly, and we wanted to make sure that the police weren't superseding those rights without a very solid reason. We've been working on anti-doxing legislation as well, preventing anyone from releasing the personal information of another person publicly with the intent of harassing them. That protects police, but it also protects members of the public who have been harassed and doxed by other people as well. We're clarifying a crime called interference with a peace officer. The police are not your boss. They should not and do not have the authority to order you to do anything except as necessary to enforce the law. Due to sort of a misunderstanding in drafting, the law ended up being that the police could order you to do certain things. And then if you didn't comply, it was a Class A misdemeanor. Well, while it may be appropriate in some circumstances if you're violating the law, that's not appropriate in most circumstances where the police are not intended to be somehow superior in their rights in the public space. We are continuing our work on munitions and tear gas, eliminating indiscriminate weapons from police stores and limiting the use of force against people who have not violated the law. We are creating a database requiring the reporting and collection of use of force reports, both to identify officers who have problems, but also to identify circumstances under which force is used for the purpose of avoiding it in the future. There's really just not a good database of when officers are using force and, you know, how we might improve it so that they don't have to use as much force against the public. We are, along with Senator Wyden on the federal level, trying to extend the CAHOOTS model, funding non-police crisis assistance to avoid conflicts between mentally ill or houseless people and the police, who are frankly ill-equipped to address the needs that they have in the public space. And we've put limits on military surplus purchases, you know, basically banning offensive weapons and armored vehicles from police inventories. I've certainly used those in my own military career, but they're not appropriate for a service whose function is to serve and protect. We're also doing a lot of work on discipline and accountability. We are continuing our work on arbitration to make sure that there is a faster, speedier process to hold officers accountable, but also to give them due process so that indeed have committed the offenses they're being disciplined for. We are also providing a publicly available misconduct records through the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. That's continuing to improve transparencies when officers engage in misconduct. The current standard, well, currently in law, you know, if they've had a suspension of their license, that is already public. We are also working to expand that so that anytime there's an economic consequence, like an officer has been suspended from duty, that that will also be available. One of the bills I've been working on personally is the qualified immunity issue. We're limited in what we can do on that because it's largely a federal doctrine. So we've been trying to increase compensation available at the state level to provide fairer compensation to victims of official misconduct. And we are also working to enable a new police oversight body approved by the voters in Portland that passed by, I think, 82% were in favor of the new police oversight body. And so we want to make sure we're empowering that. I'd like to highlight one of the things that people are sometimes mistaken about is thinking that these bills are somehow controversial. Most of these bills passed out of committee unanimously, and those that have passed the chamber have done so by wide margins, usually about 3-1 in terms of the vote margins. A second, I want to point out that these measures run the gamut from police selection to termination. We really want to change the system in ways that will help the public from the start of an officer's career to the end of an officer's career. And finally, I guess I'd just like to highlight that none of this will make any difference unless you insist that it be implemented. The culture of any organization can take a long time to change. We can set the starting conditions and we can set the standards, but the legislature does not provide consistent ongoing oversight the way that you can through your police commission and your city council. We will rely on you to see it through.
The next speaker will be Sean Shivers, who is chair of the Eugene Police Commission. Sean?
Thanks, Joel. Thank you all for inviting me here and letting me speak before you. I really like some of the changes that Marty's been talking about. In Eugene, we have a lot of these things already implemented. The visible identifiers is a policy we looked at just last week. So for those who don't know, the Eugene Police Commission is a body of citizens appointed by city council to look and review and make sure that police policy is always up to date and in line with community standards. The Police Commission is one part of the accountability ecosystem that Eugene has developed over the last few years. There's some things that can only happen at the legislature. Anything with public records law is not something that the Police Commission can deal much with. But for many of these issues, hiring, use of force, any policy or procedure, the Police Commission has the ability to review it and make recommendations directly to chief. So we are a proactive body that helps set up that culture, keep the policy updated year after year as we cycle through new commissioners. So there are 12 folks who serve on the board, or serve on the commission rather, from all across Eugene, from all sorts of, from every different walk of life. One of those members will be speaking next, Michael Hames-Garcia, is a member of the CRB. So the Civilian Review Board, the CRB, is the second piece of the accountability network. They actually take a look at incidents when they arise and provide a spot check when a complaint goes to the auditor. The auditor for Eugene is something that every city should have, in my opinion, where folks can submit complaints and commendations. If an officer is so much as rude to you, you can submit a complaint to the auditor and have that go through the process, get to their supervisor, and you know, help foster the kind of behavior we expect of our peace officers going forward. These don't have to be controversial, like Marty was saying. They don't have to be aggressive or punitive. They are a system and a method by which we ensure behavior remains appropriate. And like any job, people have bad days, they speak out of turn, and we want to make sure that that's encouraged, or that that is discouraged, the CRB, the auditor, are two parts of that. For the police commission, our job is to give the, in my opinion, a large part of our job is to give the tools to the CRB to actually make those judgment calls of when a complaint comes in, is this officer acting in a way that they knew they shouldn't have? And the police policy does two things. One, for the community, it provides a kind of security, knowing that certain behavior just isn't acceptable from our officers. For our officers, it provides a lot of clarity about what the community wants from them, what we expect from them, so that they don't unknowingly make a mistake. Now, Marty was talking about the bill before the legislature dealing with the egregious acts occasionally committed by officers. And obviously, I think there's an acknowledgement that not everybody who is a police officer should be a police officer. And for the commission, we luckily don't have to deal much with that. That is where the CRB will step in. That's where the auditor will step in and chief will step in. I am super excited because the police commission has our biannual work plan coming up. So every 2 years we get together, we create a work plan about what needs to be updated, what innovations, how can we improve on the system we've already got. That's a large part of why Eugene is always been ahead of the curve, going both at the statewide level and at the national level. There's a reason people look to us for programs like CAHOOTS, for things like body cameras. Springfield is just getting theirs now. And the work plan is a large part of that. So I encourage everyone listening to join us on May 15th at 1 p.m. On Zoom. You can go to the Eugene, if you just Google Police Commission, you can see when our next meeting will be. We'll be discussing what the community is concerned about. We will be creating a work plan that we put before City Council, and they will be approving, hopefully, that work plan, assuming we've dotted our I's and crossed our T's, to go forward for the next 2 years. These topics can be wide-ranging. I'm super excited about the work we'll be doing. After the murder of George Floyd, we had a huge influx of community members interested in participating. It's the largest application process I've ever heard of for a city body. That includes 114 applications from community members from every corner of Eugene. And we have appointed five new commissioners to help us carry that work forward for the next couple of years. But we still need community participation, so please join us.
Thank you, Sean. Our next speaker is Professor Michael Roy Hames Garcia, who is on the police commission and also studies police activities and police conduct. Michael?
Hi, thank you for having me back. It's I think I was on City Club about June or July of last year. So it's great to be back. Yeah, and this is an important topic, and I am very happy that the state legislature in Oregon is taking so many actions around not just policing reform, but also other aspects of the criminal justice system. So bail reform, et cetera. I want to start by just giving you a sense of where I'm coming from. So I have taught about the criminal justice system for over two decades now. And the point that I always try and get my students to understand is that they're part of how we got into the fix we're in currently, with 5% of the world's population and a quarter of the world's prisoners, over 1,000 people killed by police annually. Part of how we got here was by a lot of good intentions. It's tempting for my students to want to think that this has all been caused by evildoers who wanted to oppress everyone. And there are some of those. But for the most part, a lot of the attempts at reforming the criminal justice system to make it more equitable, to make it more fair, more rational, more predictable, a lot of times those attempts at reform have unintended consequences. I have my students do a policy brief at the end of their term, and I tell them a big part of how you're graded is going to be how well you anticipate possible unforeseen consequences, because that's sort of the bugbear in policy. So it was interesting to me to look over some of the bills that are making their way through the legislature. And I see in some of the bills a similar kind of desire for what I call feel-good moves, or things that seem like they're going to be an easy fix. So, for example, there's a bill or two related to oversight and police oversight. And what they essentially do is to pick up on Sean's discussion is allow for or require even, I can't tell with the language, the creation of police commissions, or what Eugene's police commission does, which is bodies to review policy for police departments, which is undeniably important. But part of what Eugene has is we have an auditor's office, which is independent. They receive complaints, they classify the complaints, they participate in the investigations, they make recommendations to the chief. The Civilian Review Board then can come in and review the work of the auditor. And so there's several different kinds of checks and balances. And one of the really important things is that there are civilians involved in the handling of complaints and the investigation of complaints. And so that's a really important element that I didn't see in the legislation that's working its way through. It's important for all the reasons that Sean described. I think that there's often a desire to fix what we think is wrong with policing by creating more training, by adding more technology, by creating more policies. And that's not, the evidence on that is mixed. It's not clear that body cameras reduce complaints against police or reduce use of force. There's studies that go different ways depending on what city you're looking at. One of the things I do think is really important is that Oregon seems to be moving in the direction of not just thinking about municipal police departments, but also county sheriff's departments. I think one of the things that guts me sometimes is that so much of there's so many complaints against sheriff's departments. Particularly those sheriff's departments that run jails. In Eugene, those complaints can't be routed through the police auditor because the jail is under the jurisdiction of the county. So I think that the finding some kind of way of catching those gaps in oversight is really important. And so I think that Portland, Salem, and Eugene are the only cities in the state that have some kind of police oversight, civilian police oversight. There's a great two-part series on Salem's in the Salem Reporter recently that I would recommend. They've essentially existed for a while and they don't hear any cases. I can't imagine not hearing any cases on the Eugene CRB, and it's not because our police department is terrible. It's because people know about the complaint process. They know that there's a police auditor. The auditor's office is located right downtown by the bus mall. So easy to access. There's a Spanish speaking intake person who can receive those complaints. It's not just about creating the mechanisms, it's also about making sure that they're accessible, making sure people are familiar with the process, that the process isn't too cumbersome for someone who might have a middle school education and maybe has lots of trauma and maybe some substance abuse issues, maybe is homeless, right? There has to be ways to not just have the mechanisms in place, but also to make sure that they are working. That I think that's important. I think I've got a few more minutes, so I'm going to move on to another one of the things. I wasn't aware that Oregon is dealing with qualified immunity, but I think people are pretty familiar with that at this point, that is something to see what we can do about at the state level. I know that there's Supreme Court decisions and whatnot that play into that. I think also there's some disturbing bills making their way through the legislature, disturbing to me. So for example, there are a couple that are requiring an increase in staffing for Oregon State Police. And nothing against Oregon State Police. I know some of them, good guys, but I think part of the message that we've been receiving, and one of the things is, I think another really good bill that I saw working its way through transfers some of the responsibility for emergency response from the police to, I can't remember the acronym, but the Oregon Emergency Response, whatever they are. If we begin to offload some of that kind of work, some of the work that's about everything from cats in trees to someone who's off their meds and walking down the street naked, right? If we can move those out of police bailiwick, then I don't know if we'll need to maintain the same levels or much less increase the levels of police in our society.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org or our Facebook page for more topics. We hope you are inspired to join us for our next podcast episode.